Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
Hello and welcome back to the Radioactive Ramblings podcast, the show where three buddies get together and ramble on about our favorite shows, movies, and we always struggle to stay on topic. I am one of your hosts, Aaron.
And today, sadly, I am the only other host, Chase. Richard was too lazy and did not watch the movie we'll be covering today.
It is a good thing that I told him he wasn't allowed to be busy anymore, because I think he really took that to heart.
Yeah, he's always at some concert, headbanging.
Always doing something, ruining his eardrums. But before we get into the topic of today's episode, I want to share a little bit of info. We do have a Patreon where we release early content, and it's all ad-free. So if you want our content ad-free and just a little bit early, consider checking that out for as little as $2 a month. And Chase, what are we going to be talking about today?
Today we're going to be talking about one of the best... No, wait, actually, cut that. All right, today we're going to be talking about Studio Ghibli's film Ponyo.
I'm really excited. This was a really fun movie to watch, honestly. But before we get into the meat of the episode, just going to let y'all know how to get a hold of us if you don't know how to do so. It is the primary way to get a hold of us.
You can never do what Richard does.
I can never do what Richard does. It is really sad that he's not here with us to impart his knowledge.
What little of it there is.
He has his niche and he's real good at it. But the first way to get a hold of us is going to be radioactive@thelorehounds.com. We've also got a channel set up in the Radioactive, or for Radioactive Ramblings within the Lorehounds Discord server. And you can send us a message, chat about the show there. You could also use the contact form or the voicemail feature at thelorehounds.com. Consider following us on Blue Sky at Radioactive141 or on TikTok, which is at Radioactive Ramblings. And then, if you wouldn't mind, please consider leaving us a rating on Apple Podcasts. It really does help other listeners like you find us and our content. Without further ado, Chase, should we get into Ponyo?
Yeah, let's get into it. I'm just going to do a quick recap slash reminder of the plot, and then we'll get into our comments about the movie. This film tells the story of a magical fish named Ponyo, who dreams of becoming human after forming an unlikely friendship with a 5-year-old boy named Sosuke. Ponyo, the daughter of a masterful wizard and a sea goddess, uses her father's magic to transform herself into a human girl, but this act disrupts the natural balance of the world. As Ponyo embraces life on land with Sosuke, her use of magic causes the sea to rise and creates a series of bizarre weather patterns, threatening Sosuke's coastal town. And the bond between Ponyo and Sosuke is tested as they must find a way to restore the balance of nature.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the coastal town for a second because it was actually inspired by a place that Miyazaki went to on vacation, I think with his family. But he went to this little coastal town in Japan, and that was what inspired the setting for this movie.
That's a cool little fact. I actually never knew that.
Yeah.
And I didn't know he went with his family. He, like, hates his son.
Maybe it wasn't with his family. Maybe he was beefing with them at the time. But he definitely
went I don't know about how he feels about his wife. So maybe he was with his wife. His son didn't exist yet or something.
Maybe. This was, I believe, the next movie that came out after Howl's Moving Castle. And with the success of Howl's Moving Castle,
I have no clue.
It was very close together. They were only 4 years apart, I know for sure. But for Miyazaki, he had a lot of success with Howl's Moving Castle, and someone recommended to him, they were like, hey, you should make more kids' movies, like make a real and true kids' movie, because Howl's Moving Castle is definitely a kids' movie, as all or most Studio Ghibli films are, but that one in particular was definitely a step in that direction. And then this feels like the completion of him going into the whole children's movie arc of his life.
Sorry, I'm searching up the every movie from Miyazaki just to say that you're wrong, just because
interested. Yeah, let's get
okay. So his first one is Lupin the Third. Really good movie, actually. I love that one. Nausicaä of the Valley of the Wind, also a really good one, is his second one. Castle in the Sky is his third one. That's like one of my like favorite ones. Totoro, fourth. Kiki's Delivery Service, fifth. Porcoroso, oh, that's such a good movie, six. Princess Mononoke, seven. Spirited Away, eight. Okay, so I think Princess Mononoke was the first one that he came out of retirement for.
Oh, that early? He was already trying to say that he was going to retire?
Yeah, dude, he's come out of retirement. He's actually come out here. I'm going to search it up. How many times did Miyazaki? At least four times he's announced retirement. Following the release of Princess Mononoke. Okay, after Princess Mononoke, he announced retirement after Spirited Away and after The Wind Rises and finally after the latest one, The Boy and the Heron.
You think he's going to come out of retirement again?
I think he's going to die before he comes out of retirement again. I'm not going to lie.
He is getting up there in age, but
hella old.
He is, but he doesn't
seem
unhealthy.
Okay, wait. On Reddit, though, it says he's withdrawn his retirement seven times.
Oh, all right. That's going to be me when I'm an old man. I hope that
I would take everything on Reddit at face value, though. Here, let's check Forbes. Oh my God, I just got a fucking full page ad.
You should click on it, see if it does anything fun to your computer.
Okay, on Forbes, it says five.
So let's go with five. Yeah, five retirements. That's a lot of retirements for anyone, but I guess when you're a creative person...
To be fair, he has led 12 bangers of movies.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, when you're that creative of a person and you've got such strong ideas floating around in your head and you're like, all right, I'm done. Maybe you felt the last movie that you did was, this is as good as it's going to get. I feel fulfilled professionally. And then you're like, shit, I have an idea to do The Boy and the Heron. I need to come out of retirement and make this happen. So yep. I get it, but it still is really funny that he keeps saying it. He could just not say anything, not make any official retirement statement, and then he would be fine and he wouldn't have to say that he's coming out of retirement. But maybe he just likes the attention.
Well, a lot of the time what it is like he's handed off the studio, right? And then they start making a movie and then he's like, no, I'm going to do it instead, and draws like 80% of the frames on his own.
Yeah, is that before or after he goes to the press and says that his son sucks?
Both. He does it both times. What happens is he says, I don't think my son can handle it, and then he goes into the theater, watches the movie that his son like made, and he's like, yeah, I was right. He's still just a boy and not a man. That's like... not verbatim, but like that's like summary of what he said once about his son after watching his movie at a premiere.
I would be so crushed. I don't know how I would keep going, man.
Dude, that's also one of the reasons I wanted to watch Ponyo, because he's, like, such a terrible father, and he's, like, he makes, like, this goated movie about, like such innocent love, and he just can't show that towards his son.
Oh, my God. The double standard is crazy. Because, like, Lisa is such a loving parent towards Sasuke, and then you have Miyazaki just going after his son.
I don't know how he does it, bro. I don't know how he does it.
I guess that's just human nature, is to be a hypocrite.
Maybe.
I know I hate my kids.
And you've got like 10 of them.
They're floating around somewhere. Anyways, this is one that it's a pretty basic story. So I think that we wanted to kind of focus more on the art and things that we looked at. We didn't want to go blow by blow the way that we do for other stuff, because it would be kind of boring. And we have the gist of it with the recap that Chase did for us. So should we get into a couple art moments?
Yeah, but one thing about that you mentioned about like it being a more simple story, I feel like that kind of helps elevate the movie a little bit, actually, because I don't know, like I feel like maybe with Howl's Moving Castle, that's one of the more weak points, is like we get dredged up and like caught in a lot of like slow moving side branching moments that take away from like the main point of the movie and like what we're really getting at with the main characters. Like, obviously I love a lot of the side characters in Howl's Moving Castle, and I really love the world, of course. But, like, I think we kind of talked about it in our review of it, where it's, like, at times, like, the pacing felt really weird because of those, like, side moments.
Yeah, I agree with you. This one was a lot more focused. It felt cleaner, almost.
Yeah, like, I think we talked about it like right after watching the movie, like I really appreciated how they didn't give us like a silly like whole school day like 20 minutes of the movie or like something like that, and it like they gave us the chance to get to know the side characters and like the world and the people around Sosuke and Lisa and like what their daily lives are like without spending like ridiculous portion of the movie on it. Like I feel like every minute of the movie actually contributed to the plot.
Yeah, I agree with that. It felt a lot shorter than Howl's Moving Castle, and I didn't get a chance to look at what the run times were on those two movies, but it felt a lot more condensed, and not in a bad way. I have like nothing bad to say about this movie, in all honesty.
Guess how much longer Howl's Moving Castle is than Ponyo?
I'm going to say like 20 minutes.
16 minutes.
Okay, I wasn't too far off. Yeah, so they're pretty close in their run times, but it just felt so much more... I guess that's the wrong way to put it. I felt more sucked into the world of Ponyo. I felt like I could really just observe what was going on.
Yeah, I felt more in the moment with Sosuke.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe that's just because... Miyazaki and the rest of the Ghibli team is really great with these child characters, so maybe they just were locked into their niche of what they're really good at doing, and they excelled because of that. There's just so many things that this movie does well, and I'm glad that we're hopping on the mic, even if Richard is being Radioactive Ramblings villain these days, not watching Ponyo.
We're the Ramblers, he's the radioactive one.
He is. What did you think about the voice talent in this? They had a lot of big names.
Yeah, okay, so me and Aaron watched this one together, but this time we watched it in English, and usually I, like, my rule for any form of media is watch it in the original language it's made in, and just stick bear through reading the subtitles, but I know that the Ghibli movies, like, do have fairly star-studded casts for the sub, or, sorry, not the sub, the dub. So, when we watched it, it was actually pretty good. They had a notorious racist Liam Neeson as Ponyo's father.
Yeah, I don't know what the, like, cultural or pop culture opinion on him is these days, because I feel like that's pretty problematic, but I don't know.
To be honest,
people forgot about it.
It's like 3 years ago now, freshman year of college, when you told me about the Liam Neeson crash out. I had never heard about it before, so like my opinion on him was just like, oh, he's just a regular like actor guy. and then you told me about his crash out, and I was like, oh, he's actually a terrible guy.
I don't know if that's
like super widely known, or maybe I was just out of the loop.
Yeah, people don't really talk about it a lot, but I think part of that has to do with Liam Neeson not really being in a ton of projects anymore. He was kind of dipping out of his career at that point. I mean, what has Liam Neeson been in these days that you can think of? I can't think of anything.
He was in that, like, one movie series Taken, like, 1 through 1 billion.
Yeah.
His daughter kept getting kidnapped on repeat or something.
Yeah, he was in a movie called Memory in 2022 and a 2021 movie called The Marksman. They just look like rehashes of Taken, I can't lie. It looks like the same concept.
Oh, he was Ra's al Ghul in the first Batman, or in the Christian Bale Batman trilogy. Christopher Nolan, I guess, Batman trilogy.
It's always been weird to me that they cast him in that role.
Yeah, I guess he's always been depicted as, like, racially ambiguous, so I guess it's not that crazy they casted a white guy as him, but...
Yeah.
It is funny that they made the whole League of Shadows, everyone was Asian, and then he was the only white guy, though.
It's been so long since I've seen those Batman movies.
Yeah, I don't know, dude.
But, of course, Star Wars, Episode 1.
Oh, Qui-Gon Jinn! He was also Qui-Gon Jinn. All right, let's get back to Ponyo.
This is our regularly scheduled rambling session. What did you think about Betty White in this movie?
I thought she did a great job. I think the voice acting all around was actually really good for the dub. It seems like in the older, but in these higher production stuff, the dub, they do a lot better, like, trying to maintain the meaning of what the characters are saying. Because, like, I know in anime, a lot of the time, the dub tries harder to mimic mouth movements to words being said than, like, the actual, like, accuracy of what's being said. So there's, like, a lot of mistranslation and stuff that goes on. But I feel like the movie does a good job of making sure the translation is done pretty well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm kind of in the same boat that you are, where most of the time I like to watch things in their original language. I feel like it's a better experience, and I think that people in America need to get more comfortable with reading subtitles every now and then. But for Studio Ghibli projects, they do just, like you said, they have
those star-studded
casts.
I mean, a lot of people in
America
just don't know how to read, so that's probably also
a
problem.
That's been especially shown to us in the past few months, hasn't it?
Yeah.
But other than Liam Neeson and Betty White, who else do we have in this cast that's a big name?
I honestly, I'm not going to lie, I did not pay attention to the cast that much.
Matt Damon is in this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Tina Fey is Lisa.
Wow, it's really star-studded.
Is this correct? I think that Google is lying to me right now. That can't be right. It is. Cate Blanchett was one of the old ladies. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So Matt Damon is Koichi, Cate Blanchett as Grandmama. Yeah, this is pretty incredible. I mean, Ghibli, I know that they always come out with the great cast, but I mean, this is just above and beyond. It goes to show how much they put into this that you don't even realize that some of these voice actors are as famous as they are or don't realize who they are. And that just shows that Ghibli is great at sucking us into these stories. You're not going for the actors. You're going for the movie itself. So it's pretty awesome. Do we want to move on to some art moments or some art things?
Yeah, let's do that.
You want to start us off with what you found interesting?
Sure. One of the things that I took note of was when Ponyo was like running on the waves made of fish, but like there were like, it wasn't like made of fish, but the water was shaped like fish.
Yeah.
That was just like such a, I really liked that. And then also, of course, like after the huge flooding, when Ponyo and Sosuke are on the boat that Ponyo made bigger, the like toy boat, and they're like looking in the water at the like all the fish, like I thought that was just such a well done moment.
Yeah, it was really a cool visualization, and the idea that the water itself is almost this sentient thing that has its own agency and can move as the same way that a fish would. It's such a cool way for them to represent the ocean, especially when they're trying to tell a story about, you know, protecting the environment and those types of themes. Personifying the ocean really helps with that.
Mm-hmm.
But something that I thought was really cool was the jellyfish and all of the like simple organisms that were around Fujimoto in the beginning when he's going on his whole spiel about how he wants a new Cambrian explosion. I thought that that was a really interesting visualization. And you have Ponyo and all of her little fish siblings. It was really funny the way that Sasuke thought that she was a goldfish. Because that's such a 5-year-old mentality to have. Just, it came out of the water, it must be a goldfish.
But I think what's even funnier, though, is everyone also just being like, oh, yeah, it's a goldfish, when he shows it to them.
The comedy in this movie was great. You have some really banger lines like, you're not busy, you're 5.
Yeah, that was... that was such a good... I forgot about that until you mentioned it again.
And then you have Sasuke trying to hide Ponyo in the bushes. Just the thought process that a 5-year-old would go through when they're trying to hide their pet. Like, it's just great. But another thing about the art that I noted was the opening credits, where you have all these really pretty waves and lighthouses, boats, fish, and almost a very peaceful ocean. And they do it in a 2D almost format. I mean, obviously the whole thing is in 2D, but you get what I mean. They do it kind of a simpler art style with the opening credits. They have things moving almost as if it's cardboard pieces on a stage. And I thought that that was really visually interesting and separate from the rest of the movie.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. What did you think about the way they represented magic in this movie?
What do you mean? Like, how Ponyo uses it, or just, like, how...
Just in general, how any of the characters use magic, how it sort of fits into the story.
I mean, I would say it's, like, most Ghibli films, where it's, like, obviously soft magic.
Yeah.
Where, like... But I like how it is, where it's, like... How they use it in Ghibli, where it's like, it's always used in a way where it's not so powerful that it's like completely like solving an issue, you know?
Yes, agreed. And speaking of sort of the magical elements, Ponyo is definitely inspired by Japanese folklore around their equivalent of a mermaid or a merman. They're called, I might get this pronunciation wrong, but they're called Ningayo in Japanese. And they're very different because they're not gender specific in the way that our mermaids are. And they're not the kind of you know, seductive sirens that we see in Western mythology. They're more like these good luck charms or these nightmarish creatures, depending on the story. And they're more fish than they are human, which is definitely true with Ponyo before she turns into a human, that she is just kind of a fish with a human face. So
I think it's also like in Japanese folklore, if you eat a mermaid, you're supposed to like gain immortality.
Yeah, yeah, that I was looking at that too. That's really interesting. And it's also seen as, I think, very bad luck if you kill one of those, the Ningayo.
I have no clue.
Some stories that I read said that you should kill them for immortality, and then some stories said that it's really bad luck and you should leave them be. So it's all up in the air, it seems. But they are largely believed to be based off of fishermen spotting oarfish, which, if you don't know, oarfish are pretty massive. So it's easy to see how people in Japan in the past thought that they were half
Being from California, I've seen them like in person in real life on Catalina.
Oh, really? Are they like as big in person as people make them out to be?
They're ridiculously large. They like I've seen them like wash up on the shore during I used to be in Boy Scouts during some like Boy Scouts like early morning diving excursions.
That's really cool. And you never saw one with a human face on it?
No, I would have eaten it, though.
Living forever. Radioactive ramblings all the way into the millions.
Radioactive ramblings, but it's just me talking to myself.
Listen, we have a long time for me to find my own to consume. I think Richard's already immortal, but he won't watch the movies that we like anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Richard's on the tipping point, bro.
Of immortality or of death?
Of just, he's about to kick the bucket, dude.
I've been saying that for years. That guy's on his way out.
For years. Who do you think's gonna go first, the Pope or Richard?
Ooh. I'm gonna say Richard.
You, he has minimum 2 more years left.
Yeah.
The Pope.
I
was right. He didn't pass like you said he would.
We all kind of hyped ourselves up because of Conclave coming out. I think everyone wanted everyone wanted to see a new pope get chosen because everyone got to see that movie.
We all hyped ourselves up.
Did you have anything else about the art?
I think that the art in this movie was just, it felt like there was less standout moments because every moment of the movie just was so, like, not to say in the other Ghibli films that this is not the case, but I feel like it's even more so the case in this one where it's like, every frame is just so beautiful. Like, there's so, like, obviously, it has a lot to do with the setting and, like, interacting with the water, probably. But, like, just every, like, even regular moment in the movie just feels like such a treat to watch.
Yeah, it is a beautiful movie. I mean, I can't think of a single frame that I saw that I thought was weird or out of place. You know, they even do the funny and ridiculous shots or drawings in a great way. I'm thinking of when Ponyo, they have a shot of her in the front and she's kind of half in her half fish mode where her legs are a little chickeny and she runs up at the camera. It's just so funny the way that they depict her. Just big smile. But I think that we are going to take a quick break here, and then when we come back we're going to talk about the moments that we found interesting, and then wrap it up with how we felt overall and talk about, you know, how this fits into the overall Ghibli stuff, what we thought about it in relation to the other movies. So we'll be right back.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be.
With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
And we're back. Chase, would you like to do us the honors of starting us off with some of your interesting moments that you took note of?
Yeah. Whenever Ponyo uses her magic and she reverts to her more like fish-like form, kind of is like really interesting, especially because we get the sentence from her father earlier in the movie where he's like, humans can't wield magic. Like, I thought that's like an interesting way to display she's losing her humanity like when she uses her magic.
I wonder if while she's in her human form, it seems like she's got a little bit of magic kind of left over, and then you see her conk out after she does everything with the boat, and I thought that was a nice touch for them to show that she's essentially running out of magic as a human.
Yeah.
What did you think about the sort of environmental stuff that they were going for?
Yeah, this movie, like many other of the Ghibli movies, kind of depicts the negative effects humans have had on the world and nature in specific. But I would say that the movie like takes much more of a backseat to that, like with that message, and has a more like upbeat and lighthearted narrative of love. Like, obviously, the movie makes it clear that the humans have polluted the ocean and like, that's obviously very bad, right? But I think they also, like, do a good job of not, like... I think it's clear that Ponyo is a children's movie, right? I think it can obviously be enjoyed at all ages. I enjoyed it now, like, probably to nearly the same level I did when I first watched it and I was a kid. And I think that, like, there are a lot of messages within the movie that are enjoyable for all ages. But I think clearly the movie is like Disney movies, like made for a child audience, but can be enjoyed by adults.
Yeah, I think that this is not a unique thought that I've had, but just the idea that a kid's movie has to be not enjoyable just because it's made for kids is just a complete and utter, you know, line of bullshit.
like
a good kids movie is just a good movie in general, I feel.
Yeah, exactly. Like, a good kids movie is a movie that obviously a child can understand and have takeaways from, but that doesn't mean that an adult can't go and sit down and watch it and be engaged and enjoy it. With a lot of, like, the older animated Disney movies, we kind of get that, like, with, not older, that's a little ridiculous to say. But, like, from when I was growing up, like, Cars, like, the first Cars movie, like, that movie is, like, you can go back and watch that right now and have laughs and enjoy it. And, like, understand, like, motifs and stuff within that movie that aren't, like, necessarily for just kids to understand. But, like, yeah, coming back to Ponyo, I feel like this has like that feel to it where it's like it's geared more towards children. It's supposed to be relatable for children, but like there are those things within the story that are very adult.
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of those stories where, like you said, you watched it as a kid and you enjoyed it as a kid. Now you've watched it as an adult and you really enjoyed it as an adult. And me, for the first time watching this movie as an adult, all I could think about was, I wish I had watched that movie when I was a kid. Like, this would have been an awesome movie for me to have in my repertoire. And that's just how I feel about all these Ghibli movies in general, is, man, I wish that someone had showed me this movie when I was a little kid. I think I would have gotten a lot out of it.
Yeah, dude, watching all these movies, like, that's something I truly, like, appreciate my parents for, was, like, putting me on the, like, because what we would do is, like, we would, when Netflix was still just, like, a DVD rental, wow, that's so crazy to say, and VHS too. We would go and get just like a Ghibli movie like every month and just watch it like every weekend for like 2 or 3 weeks and then return it and get a new one.
That's awesome. Yeah, I used to be a frequenter at the local video store when I was a kid, so I totally understand that experience. Too bad but that they were... I didn't do any of the Ghiblis.
Yeah, the Ghibli ones though were always like so popular that you had to like put in like a request and be like on a waiting list to get one.
Yeah, it is crazy. I know that when you said that you still have the joint VHS CD player, did you ever get the Ghibli movies on VHS?
Yes, we did, bro. We did all the time. I remember we also have like 3 of the original Scooby-Doo movies on VHS.
I remember I had on VHS the Scooby-Doo movie where he's like getting sucked into the computer and they have to like do the baseball video game or whatever inside the computer. Anyways, back to Ponyo. I thought it was so impressive that Sasuke's mother, Lisa, just had this ability to adapt to the weird situations and embrace whatever was going on. She didn't bat an eye at the fact that Ponyo was now a human girl. And that this was just something that she had to deal with. She was like, okay, I'll make them some warm milk with honey, and we're just going to treat her like a normal little girl.
Yeah, I think she was probably a little more, bit more worried about the flood than having to make sure a random kid was okay. I'm not going to lie.
That's a really great point. She kind of was about to lose her house to a flood. but luckily they had elevation on their side.
True.
Yeah.
They were on the tip of the island.
They were on the tip of the island. But back to, you know, Sasuke and Ponyo. I've brought this up before, but I just want to hammer it home again that Ghibli finds the perfect balance with giving the children actual kid traits, but still writing them as interesting characters. They don't make them unrealistically children. That's a mistake that so many movies do, where they just make their children into little adults with their lines. Yes,
tiny, or like teenagers.
Yeah, like Sasuke talks the way that a 5-year-old would talk, because he is a little kid, you know? And it fits with the story. They give him plenty of interesting character traits to make him interesting despite it. And actually, I don't even want to say despite it. I want to say it adds to it that he is a real and genuine child with an interesting characteristics and an interesting story. So just kudos to Ponyo. This movie does everything right.
Yep.
Yeah. It also really subverted my expectations. I think that any other movie like this, Fujimoto would have been the big bad. And him working towards, you know, getting rid of the humans and creating his new Cambrian explosion like he wants, that would have been the focus of the movie, and it would have been all about stopping him. But instead what they do is in the first, like, 15-20 minutes of the movie, Ponyo gets into the lab, gets into the elixir and lets everything loose and just ruins his plan. And then the conflict in the movie isn't that, you know, they have to stop Fujimoto, whatever. The conflict is the journey that Ponyo and Sasuke are going on. And that's so much more interesting, and it's so much more relevant to those two characters. Because at the end of the day, stopping some mad scientist from pulling off a crazy plot is realistically not something that 2 5-year-olds would really care about, but you have them trying to get back to Sasuke's mother, and Ponyo wants to be happy and be a human, and that's a much better character motivation and a much better conflict for them to explore than what they could have gone with. So
yeah, I agree. I think it's more fun as like an adventure narrative than like let's do combat with the guy, and like, here's a clear evil in the world, and we're clearly the good guys.
Yeah. I liked in the end that everyone was not evil. Like, you had that old lady, I can't remember her name.
Toki,
thank you. You had Toki and Fujimoto, who are just kind of these curmudgeon-y characters. They're not necessarily evil, they're just a little grouchy and have negative views on the world, but they're still good-hearted people who want good things to happen for the people they're close to. You know, Fujimoto eventually gets on board with Ponyo becoming a human. His very beautiful goddess wife had to convince him a little bit, but, you know, he came around in the end. And it's just, it shows that these kids have a good support system around them and that they're going to end up in a good place. So.
Yeah, crazy. Never mind.
What were you going to say?
Bro was going crazy and his wife had to like say one thing and he was like, yep, you're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah. everyone needs that person in their life to talk them out of doing some wacky stuff, I think.
Yeah.
So that was pretty much the end of my thoughts on Ponyo. Do we want to get into how we feel, or do you have anything else that you wanted to talk about?
Let's get into how we feel, and if something comes to mind, we'll ramble on after that.
Yeah. You want to start us off?
Yeah. What I wrote is, in all honesty, I do believe that Ponyo is one of Ghibli's and Miyazaki's best works. I think they do such a good job of making a movie that can be enjoyed with lessons and messages that are applicable at all ages. This is probably one of the most visually stunning works of Ghibli, and I really do appreciate and love the pacing of this movie. And trust me, everyone, I'm a natural born hater, but I could not think of anything to gripe about with this movie. So it's just a 10 out of 10. Like, I think, like, as a movie that's clearly made to be, like, I would say most of the Ghibli movies are, like, in the same boat as, like, made-to-be children's movies, but, like, can be enjoyed at all ages. Like, I think this is probably the one that does it best, and it's just a clear 10 out of 10 for me. I think a movie that some may argue are made-to-be children's movie, but I don't really think it is, like, Howl's Moving Castle. I think Howl's Moving Castle can be enjoyed by a child. I just don't think, like, In my opinion, it seems like more of like an animated movie for an adult to watch. Like, not that it's like adult in what it's like sharing. Like, I don't think it's like that deep of a message that it's giving us. But I also don't think it's paced or written. And the characters, in my opinion, don't convey like that childlike factor.
Yeah, if I can jump in for one second, I think that Howl's Moving Castle is more like, you gotta be like a middle school aged kid to really start grasping the concepts that they're going
for. The thing is, like, not like trying to downplay middle schoolers, just I don't think, like, myself as a middle schooler, like, I watched this movie when I was a little kid, and like, not this movie, but like most of these movies. I mean, I think that misled what I was trying to say. I watched like 90% of the Miyazaki and Ghibli movies like when I was a kid, and obviously I enjoyed them all because like they're just all great and like very pretty to look at.
Right.
And I would say like Howl's Moving Castle is one of the ones that like I definitely didn't absorb when I first watched it as like a little kid. Like, there were obviously the things that I like was able to understand, like, oh, war is bad and Howl is like doesn't like war, right? But like, there are so many other like minor and important things going on in that movie that I don't think, like, even as a middle schooler, I would have been able to appreciate, just because like I don't know. I feel like when I was a middle schooler, I was a piece of shit. And, like, I didn't really, like, I didn't really, like, try and look for, like, deeper narrative elements in anything. Yeah.
I feel like middle school is the absolute worst age, or the worst that anyone is in their life. Unless you grew up to be a serial killer.
Yeah, unless you did some heinous shit as an adult. Like,
I think that for most of us, we peak our horribleness in middle school.
I would definitely say, like, the worst person I ever was probably, like, from sixth grade to, like, freshman year of high school.
Yeah, I would second that. But yeah, actually, before I get into my how I felt overall, I wanted to quickly talk about the themes that they were going for with, you know, unconditional love and the way that it's so easy for a child to, I'm specifically talking about Sasuke here, to commit to, like, unconditionally loving Ponyo, because the only thing in his mind is, this is my friend, I'm close with this person, and, like, yeah, of course I love Ponyo. And it's just such a nice message about how kids have a more simplistic view of the world, and it's a much purer and endearing and very touching sense of emotions, you know?
Yeah, it's a beautiful portrayal of love, and that, like, especially with, like, I don't know, like, platonic love, and, like, how, like, it's so, like, before, like, societal elements get involved, it's so easy to, like, just be like, yeah, I love this person, I care about this person, and like, why would I not naturally, like, care for my friend in a way that is, like, equivalent to the way I love my family?
Yeah. And that's such a great point to end on for that before I get into my how we feel.
Sorry, one more thing before you get into your thing. I would say another Ghibli movie that's, like, definitely made for kids but can be enjoyed at all ages, like Ponyo, I would think, like, the closest representation of that is probably, like, Totoro and Spirited Away. And I think that, like, even this movie does a better job than Spirited Away at conveying, like, these messages in, like, a way that all ages can enjoy. Because I think Spirited Away is definitely a more, like, mature movie than this one is. And, I don't know what it is. Like, I think this movie does such a good job of being, like, a kid's movie that you go to watch with your kid and you come out and you're like, wow, like, I enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, totally. It is. It's one that if I were a parent, my 10 secret kids notwithstanding, if I were a parent and I was taking my kids to a movie, this is exactly the kind of movie I would want my kids to see and that I would enjoy. You know, it's just, it's so, so good. And I agree with you that this does the whole concept a lot better, or not a lot better, but just a little bit better than.
Yeah, like, I think Spirited Away is still, like, don't get me wrong, I don't know. Like, maybe the way I was talking about it, I think all those other movies that I was mentioning are great movies. Very good movies. Take your kid to see Spirited Away. Like, that's a great movie. And your kid will enjoy that movie, and you will enjoy that movie. But I think, like, that your kid will watch Spirited Away and absorb probably, like, 30% of it, and watch this movie and absorb, like, 60% of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a story from a kid's perspective that a kid can understand. So, yeah, I thought that Ponyo was by far the funniest Studio Ghibli movie. I already brought up the whole, you're not busy, you're five, which is just, I can't think of a better line in a movie just seriously, like, I laughed harder at that than I have at anything in a really long time. And
I don't know, Calcifer is pretty funny, dude.
Calcifer is pretty funny. You're not wrong on that.
But yeah, I agree. You're Not Busy Year 5 is maybe one of the greatest one-liners behind Gretchen.
Well, listen, Dylan G, you can't beat him with the one-liners. You can't.
You can't beat Dylan G.
I also really agree with you, just to reiterate, that this is an exceptional movie for any age, and it put me into a world that I didn't want to leave, and in the end, the resolution, it felt so perfect, but at the same time, it left me wishing that I had more time with these characters. The music, of course, is great. Studio Ghibli has this beautiful orchestral background music for all of their movies, and I admire it a lot. Music has never been my strong suit in terms of anything, so I don't have any details for you if they did this or they did that right. All I know is that it really captured my heart and my ear. I wish I could knock it down half a point for the sake of disagreeing with Chase, but I really can't think of a reason to deduct anything from this film, so I'm also going to have to give it a 10 out of 10. If I could go higher, I probably would. This is going to be a new comfort movie for me. I think if I'm feeling sick and I want to put on something in the background while I'm playing phone games, I might have to throw on this movie. So previous to watching this, I put Spirited Away at my number one slot. I'm going to have to put this one at the top now.
Sorry, finish your thought. My bad.
Oh, I was just going to say I'm a natural born hater like you. So to put something at a 10 out of 10, it's pretty, it's got to be great.
I'm not going to lie. When I was grading it and I was like, maybe I'll give it a 9.8 or a 9.9 out of 10. I immediately in my head was like, I can't sit here and be like, I can't think of anything to dock it for and then not give it a 10 out of 10. I was like, that would be such a ridiculous, like, just like pretentious thing to do. Like, because then nothing's a 10 out of 10. Like, I can't sit here and be like, well, I don't have any complaints about the movie, but it's not a 10 out of 10. Like,
yeah. Like, seriously, no complaints. That's incredible when it comes to a movie that I can always find something to nitpick, and I seriously couldn't find anything to nitpick other
especially
than
especially with like an animated movie too. Like, obviously animation is, like, in my opinion, I think it's a very hard process. Like, there's like to convey so much emotion through drawing and all that and all of like that, like mimicking mouth movements in your drawings to like what's being said, like, that's so hard. And that's like something I don't think that like animation is like a worse medium. I just mean like it's much harder to do that in my opinion.
Yeah.
And so like just like being able to do it that well is just so impressive. And I think this movie does like a perfect job of doing what it aims to do.
Yeah.
Obviously I've steamrolled this point a million times in this episode. Like, it's in my opinion probably like one of the, if not the perfect children's movie, you know, like,
yeah,
I can't give it less than a 10. Like, it does everything it aims to do in such a great way.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. And to jump off of something you said earlier about, you know, this movie or just animation in general, there's so much that could go wrong. This film, 170,000 hand-painted frames. That's just fucking incredible. Yeah, it's incredible.
How many did Miyazaki do?
I don't know. Let me see that.
Search it up right now. I wanna bet it's over 40,000.
Did Miyazaki draw for Ponyo? I can't find anything specifically on how many he did, just that the overall number. Oh, wait, he Ooh, he did about 70% of the individual frames in the movie.
Wait, how many did you say were in the movie?
170,000 frames.
Holy crap.
My God.
Holy crap.
Someone get him some.
So he did like 120,000 frames.
Apparently. I don't know how accurate that is, because it says that the animation team was a team of 70. So I think that they might be upselling his involvement.
It does make sense, because there are other films where it's like, it's recorded that like he has done like 80% of the frames on his own.
Yeah, I just...
And Ponyo was like one of those movies where he like was like, you guys aren't doing this right, I'm going to do it on my own.
Ultimate micromanager, actually the micromanagement final boss.
True, but I mean, like, you've seen the movie.
Yeah. All I can say is that guy does a great job, but I sure as hell would not want to work for or with him.
Yeah, that I'm sure that would be hell.
Yeah. Any other final thoughts to bring us home here?
Like, if Miyazaki was as good at showing affection to his son as he was for his work, I think, like, his son would be the happiest kid alive, or guy alive. But yeah. You can't be blessed with everything, I guess!
Just the dual realities of making the best kids' movies ever and being a horrible father is just the funniest thing in my head. I'm sure it's not funny for
the son. That's the best thing ever about watching Ponyo, is you're like, wow, like, this is such a beautiful film. Like just about, like, the pureness of unconditional love, and, like, Miyazaki just has conditional love for his son.
I just don't think he's watching his own movies. He writes the script, he draws the frames, and he's like, well, I guess I never have to take the advice that I imparted onto this thing. But anyways, folks, I think we're gonna start to wrap up here. Chase, you have anything you want to say to the people?
I guess that's all we have for today, and thank you all for joining us for Ponyo, and please contact us, preferably through the Discord, to let us know how you felt about the episode, and maybe to tell us which movie you'd like us to go over next. We really would love some feedback on that. We try to go off of everyone's suggestions as much as possible. Currently, we're not... I think, actually, we were getting suggestions for Ponyo in the Discord, so... I was going to say, it was, like, Alicia and maybe Davey Mac were...
Yeah, I think the two of them both were talking up Ponyo. So, if you have an idea, please send it our way, which... Yeah, shout out to all the people in the Discord who are active and chatting with us. I don't know about you, Chase, but if you ever want to get a hold of me specifically and you want to ping me, that's totally fine. I don't mind.
Yeah, definitely. Like, pinged. If you at me in the Discord, I will probably respond within the day.
Yeah,
I mean,
same,
like,
here.
Obviously, please don't spam us, but like, we would love to interact with you guys and see how you guys are feeling about our episodes, your thoughts, how we could improve, and like, what you want to see us talk about.
Yeah, and if you have any ideas, it doesn't even have to be Ghibli. If there's anything coming up that you want to see. Yeah.
Like games, too? Let us know.
Yeah, we're... Coming up in the pipeline, I do want to shout this out real quick, because I'm really excited for this. We have been podcasting for just over a year, and we have a little one-year special that's going to be coming probably in the upcoming weekend of this week, which is... Today is April 9th, so you can do the math. And...
You can do the math. That's so good. probably won't be this weekend, actually.
Oh, that's right. You're going to be doing some travel.
I'll be out of town.
That's right. So next week, you can do the math on that. Next weekend, it'll be coming out, and we're really excited. We're going to do a little bit more free form where we just talk about things that we didn't get the chance to cover in our main coverage or that we didn't really want to do a full episode on, like video games. I don't know. Have we ever done a full episode just on a video game before? I don't think that we have.
No, we haven't. But I mean, if you guys have any suggestions, please shoot them to us through any form of communication you're most comfortable with. And we will definitely mention it in the podcast. And if we're very interested in, or not very, but if we're interested in it at all, we will probably try it. I think we're coming up on a pretty long content drought. So we're trying to jump on things that obviously you guys are very interested in. We want to keep you guys entertained. So let us know.
Yeah. And then in the meantime, while we're going through this kind of content drought, me and Richard are going to be bringing back Fallout lore. And of course, Chase, you are more than welcome to join us on any of those Fallout lore episodes. But I know that that's not particularly your forte, so you usually sit those ones out. But that's coming down the pipeline. You have that to look forward to.
Yeah, I'll probably have to be a viewer for that one.
Yeah. Richard and I were talking about some potential themes because we're thinking of doing this new batch of Fallout lore episodes as kind of a season of Fallout lore. And we're looking at Wild Wasteland as our theme. So we're going to talk about all the ridiculous stuff in the Fallout lore, like aliens, and there's a weapon that you can shoot garbage at people with. Like, there's just so many funny things in the Fallout lore. So stay tuned for that. And I also want to give a shout out to all the other podcasts in the network, because we have a really great community of podcasters, and they all really just deserve to have more ears on their podcast, because there's so much work, so much love put into this community. First of all, to the people who make all of this possible, our parent podcast, The Lorehounds. They have coverage going right now for Wheel of Time. They today just released a wrap-up episode for White Lotus, which I actually got to record with John and David. So if you're interested in hearing me talk about White Lotus and talk with John and David about Buddhism and all of these other themes, tune into that. Also in the network, got some excellent podcasts like Wool Shift Dust, Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, Rings and Rituals. Keep an ear out for all three of those. They're on a little bit of a break right now, but they will be coming back. Properly Howard Movie Review. They just released a review for Logan's Run, and the Severance podcast will be back when the new season of Severance comes out. And of course, the newest affiliate, Nevermind the Music, which not even in 2 hours ago, I was listening to their latest episode on Everyone Wants to Rule the World, and that was pretty incredible. So go check that out. Links to all of these and info on how to get a hold of us, it's going to be in the show notes. So thank you all for joining us, and we can't wait to hear from you, and we can't wait to see you in the next Ghibli episode.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively at a Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.